You're listening to the Legacy Church podcast, recorded in Liberty Lake, Washington. For more information, jump on our website, legacychurchwa.com.
Hey everyone, good morning. How are we doing? Good, good, good. Good, good, good. Wow. If I've not met you, my name's Gary, lead pastor here. You know, you stand in this moment and there's like 50 things going through you. Okay, so we're going to just stay calm. Deep breath. You notice the shirt that I'm wearing? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We do have these available in the lobby. We just got the black color in, and they're available, so I'm modeling it today. So there you go. Well, there's nothing in the back, I don't think. Sorry. Okay. All right. So we're launching into a Jesus apprentice, and I want to start with this statement. Jesus wants to heal the world. Jesus wants to heal the world. And that's kind of lead us in today. The other thing I did want to mention, just by way of a side note, on the men's conference Patty just talked about, Brock Huard is going to be one of the speakers there at the conference. He was there last year. That guy's the real deal. Those of you that watch Fox Sports and college football and whatever, it was a powerful moment. And he prayed, called all the young guys. Like, you want to bring your teenage son to that? Great. It was awesome. He just believes in leading the next generation. And so it was a great moment there. So he's going to be speaking, be back again. And you don't want to miss that. And also, just write this down somewhere, maybe in the back of your mind. 2021, we're going back to Israel, and we'd love to take you with us, and we'd love to baptize you in the Jordan River. I mean, it's just a great experience. We're going back 2021. We'd love to take as many of you with us as possible. We went at 2019. It was an amazing journey together, so we'll be talking more about that in the days ahead. Jesus Apprentice. It made me think, as I began to kind of process this series about athleisure wear. Are you familiar with that phrase, athleisure wear? Is that like a thing? It's a thing. I didn't know that that's what actually you called athleisure wear. Athleisure wear, it's a hybrid of sorts. So I had to actually do a little research on this. Athletic clothes for leisure activity. That makes sense. Been popular for well over a decade. I don't know where I've been. And I know that because I wear it. Became popular because it gave you sporty vibes minus the workout. Come on. Who's all for sporty vibes minus the workout, right? I mean, I'll never run track, but I'll wear a track suit. I'll wear it. And you'll think I run track, but I don't. I don't get a dime from Nike or Adidas or Lululemon. I said it. It's athletic wear for top athletes, which of course I am not. It's athleisure wear. They're saying yoga clothing sales outpaced people that are actually doing yoga. It's obvious. We love the clothes because they're comfortable. And you feel athletic when you're wearing it, right? It's smart marketing. People like the idea. And here's the idea. I'm going to look like I do whatever I sport, but I'm not actually going to do it. Right? I'm going to sell you the belief that I work out, but I have no intention of actually working out. And where am I going with this? And here it is. Brace yourself. I wonder if we sometimes approach our life with Jesus the same way. Yeah, the oxygen just left the room. Like, oh. We want God in our lives as long as it's comfortable, but no intention beyond that. We know church is an important component, but as long as it doesn't. The mission of Jesus is important as long as it fits my. I have the gear on, Know the motions, but with no intention of fulfilling the ultimate purposes of Jesus. Well, that's not to, I know that sounds heavy, but I don't mean it to be. It's just in setting up this series, it's designed to get us moving in the right direction, watch, towards God's intended desire and purpose for our lives, our mission. This series, I'll just tell you, it's intended to stretch us. It's already stretched me. It's already messed up a little bit of the paradigms that I have just been around. Just growing up and then as a pastor. It's where God is leading us, I believe. Now, I've mentioned that I like to Peloton. I love the Peloton bike. That's a thing I can do. I really like the Peloton bike because I have the Peloton shoes. And you know, you get there and I come in with my gym bag, Nike gym bag, right? Set it down, unzip it, pull out my shoes. These special, how many of you have seen, like they're wrist road bike shoes, but they're made for the Peloton. So while everybody else is sliding their tennis shoe into that little cagey thing, what is that, you know? I click in. Right? It's legit. People, they just naturally assume, he's got the shoes. He must therefore really, he's serious about this. He really does this. Like, he does this in the summer too, right? All I'm saying is the shoe wear is congruent with the exercise that I'm doing, right? I'm actually doing it. You can't wear those anywhere else because you walk kind of funny, right? It's aligning what we, let me read it to you this way. My hope is to get on the other side of this series with that sense of congruity between the faith that I claim and the life that I live. So it's congruent. It's who I am. It's what we are. It's who we are and what we do. So the point is, Jesus wants to heal the world, and he's choosing, here it is, he's choosing you to do it. Jesus wants to heal the world, and he's choosing you to do it. In John 3:17, we know what John 3:16 says. 3:17 says, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him." He wants to heal the world. He wants to save the world. And the danger is that we forget that. The danger as the church is that in many cases we've forgotten our mission. We've forgotten our purpose. And no matter your background or how you arrived at Legacy, maybe this is your first time visiting, or you've been here a couple times, or maybe you've been here a long time. However you got here, I want to say this. We're glad you're here. We're excited that you're here and jumping in on this journey with us. And sometimes with a group of people and a whole full house in the first service just left. You might have seen it in the parking lot. It was pretty exciting. Sometimes there's so many different church backgrounds and life experiences. And some are great and some not so great. Some folks are carrying hurt and maybe baggage or scars or triggers, that different things that happen as it relates to even the life of a community of a church. Different experiences. It just seems to me we need a unifying factor. And I think the best place, always the best place, for a unifying factor when there's people coming from all different sort of walks of life and experiences and expressions is Jesus. Jesus is the unifying factor, the Word of God, and the mission of God. What is the mission of God? Why are we here for such a time as this? Legacy Church, 2 years and about 4 months old. 4 months old. What's the mission of Jesus and how do we join him on that mission? It was Henry Blackaby, a theologian, who would put it this way. He said, find out where God's working and go join him, right? Find out where he's working, and I guarantee you he's working. He's working in your neighborhoods. He's working at your gym. God is working. You got to find out where he's working and go join him in what he's doing. So if we're not clear on this message, we're going to send some confusing signals and messages to the world around us. And I want to ask you a question. What do people think in our culture when they hear the word Christians? What do people in our culture think? There was a little survey done of people outside the church between 16 and 29. Anybody between 16 and 29 in here, kind of wave at me. All between 16, what? Yeah. All right, good. Yeah. Between 16 and 29, outside the church, were asked, when you hear Christian, what do you think? The top three answers. Number one, anti-homosexual. Number two, judgmental. And number three, hypocrite. Yeah, ouch. Friendly was way down, and trustworthy was in there, about 52%. So is it possible that you and I, we may have friends that when they hear Christian, they're thinking of something else? And it makes me think that we need to be clear with our message. And my hope is that the next few weeks, 8 weeks leading up to Easter, is going to help us. Who is Jesus calling? What is his message? What is the mission? Matthew 4:19, Jesus says, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Or it could be said, come apprentice. Come be my apprentice. That word disciple or apprentice is in the Greek mathetes and in the Hebrew talmadim. These means disciple or follower or apprentice is the strongest word. To be one of Jesus' disciples is to apprentice under Jesus. It's to organize your life under three basic goals. And these three basic goals: be with Jesus, become like Jesus, and take on the mission of Jesus. So be with Jesus. We want to be with Jesus. And by being with Jesus, Matthew 5 says this. It says, when Jesus saw his ministry drawing huge crowds, he climbed a hillside, and those who were apprenticed to him, the committed, climbed with him. And arriving at a quiet place, he sat down and he taught his climbing companions, which would be one of his greatest messages. And we'll unpack a little bit over the next few weeks. He taught his climbing companions, the apprentice, those that were apprenticed to him, the committed. So even at the height of his ministry popularity, Jesus sought a place and moments to just be with his companions. It's what apprentices do. They hang out in quiet places with Jesus just to learn from him. Become like Jesus, right? Be with Jesus, become what's an apprentice. They be with Jesus. Sorry about that. They become like Jesus. Luke 6:40 says, students are not greater than their teacher, but the student who is fully trained will become like his teacher. So the more you spend time with Jesus, the more you begin to take on his likeness, his characteristics, his responses. You see this in the sports world. Athletes have like a mentor, somebody that they follow how they play and are influenced by. Coaches do the same thing, served as maybe apprentices or assistant coaches under a great coach, and they go on and they take that greatness over to another team, and it's pretty awesome to watch. By learning, by sitting under. So the question, who are you influenced by? You tend to emulate your teacher. Now, so why would this be any less true of Jesus and following Jesus? It would figure that the more time I spend in his presence, in the presence of Jesus, the more I become like him. So if being with Jesus, we're just setting up apprentice, being with Jesus, becoming like Jesus are goals, then transformation is imminent. In other words, if you just do those two things, just be with Jesus, it's going to affect who you are. You're going to become more like him. Change is imminent. You're not going to be the same person you were a year ago. Just change. You grow, you mature. I love what John Mark Comer, the book we mentioned a few weeks back, Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, he talks about some of the benefits of apprenticeship to Jesus. He says the whole point of apprenticeship is you model all of your life after Jesus, and in doing so, you recover your soul. You ever thought of it that way? To have the warped part of you put back into shape. Don't elbow anybody, but some of us have more warpedness than others. To experience healing in the deepest parts of your being, to experience what Jesus called life to the full. John 10:10 says the thief only comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Jesus says, I've come that they might have life and have it to the full. There's a blessing in being an apprentice of Jesus. There's an understanding. There's a fullness of life. So the unifying factor is Jesus. And as apprentice of Jesus, my goals are, I want you to follow this one more time, to be with Jesus. When I'm with him, that's good for me because I learn his ways. And then I become like Jesus, which is good for you. Trust me, it is good for you, right? It's good for my wife because I become a better husband, because I become a better friend to my friends. I become a better pastor to those I lead. We just become more like him. And lastly, here's the last purpose, and really it's the why of apprenticeship, to take on the mission of Jesus. To do what he would do if he were you. And that's good for the world. That's good news for the world. When we get that, when we get that peace, when we recognize that he's called all of us, he wants to heal the world, and he's actually called you and me and all of us collectively to do that. That's good news for the world. And if you're with me on that, you can kind of say amen. And that's true. Wes Davis, a friend of mine who pastors over on the peninsula, he's what I would consider a rock star pastor. He's just a great leader, and I admire him greatly. He wrote a book in about 2005 called Jesus Apprentice. And it is the inspiration to this series. In fact, I'm taking a group of guys. We're walking through this in a men's group on Saturday mornings. And it's a 40-day book. You just, Monday through Friday, and you just journal a little bit of some thoughts and write some things down, and we discuss it together. And it's simple, but it's not. You know what I'm saying? It's simple, but it's not. It's a simple read day to day. But so in this series, we're going to just draw some excerpts from this book, and hopefully it will inspire you as well. It is available on Amazon, by the way. You can find that, Jesus Apprentice by Wes Davis. I want to read an excerpt today in the book, and it really set the tone for where we're going. It says, the world needs help now. The world needs help now. Jesus thinks the world needs changing now. The world needs help. The problems of the world simply will not wait. Now, if you're like me, you believe that the world needs changing, but you're not exactly sure where to start. Which kingdom do you sign up for? Should you jump on the Pax Romana boat and try to spread the best human government, you know, the kingdom of Rome, the best human government and way of living so people can have everything that this world can offer? Or do you join the RAF or the religious armed forces and go to battle to try to make people better? Or maybe just complain about both. Then one day, and you're going to see the tense or the angle that he writes from here in this sentence. Then one day, this Jesus that you've been hearing about comes your way. You're at work, maybe you're discussing the latest in Roman politics, or perhaps the winner in last night's gladiator games, and Jesus walks into your life. Right off, you like him. You like the fact that he doesn't put up with all that religious stuff. You're intrigued that he seems so spiritual and yet so real. And you like the fact that he seems to really like you. In fact, he's the one that starts the conversation. Over the course of your chit-chat, Jesus seems to be saying all the things that your heart feels are right but have not been able to put into words. You find yourself saying, yeah, me too. Then he tells you about his mission to change the world. And while you're not exactly sure what he's talking about, you really like him. In fact, you kind of believe in him. If anyone could change the world, he can. One of the things he keeps talking about is this thing called the kingdom of God and how the only way to change the world is to change people's hearts. Then he says, follow me. And with that, you've been invited to go on this mission with Jesus to change the world. Immediately, you experience this rush of adrenaline. Wow, he's choosing me. Of all the people in the world, Jesus chooses me. Then it hits you. Me? Not me. And you're flooded with all the reminders that you're not good enough and how Jesus would be making the biggest mistake of his life, taking you with him. Change the world by changing hearts. You can't do that. Your heart needs changing too. Not wanting to offend him, you ask for a little bit of time to think about it. This is a big decision, you tell him. There are a lot of things that you need to do to free yourself up to go on a mission like this. You'll need to tell him tomorrow. He should understand that, but he doesn't bite. Jesus looks right through your excuses, and he says, no procrastination, no backward looks. You can't put the kingdom, God's kingdom off till tomorrow. Seize the day. Jesus stands in front of you. Time stands still. There you stand, trembling, heart racing. The decision you make in the next moment will change the rest of your life. What do you do? There's a lump in your throat. You swallow, still undecided. Jesus turns. He walks toward the door. It opens. He passes through and the door begins to close. Then something from deep inside of you, a hunger that causes you to lunge forward and slip through the door just before it shuts, you follow. It's at that moment that you discover the mission of bringing God's kingdom to solve the huge problems of the world starts with a change in your own heart. No procrastination, no backward looks. You can't put God's kingdom off until tomorrow. That's Luke 9 from the Message paraphrase. A good beginning point to jump into this series is to ask the question, where are you with Jesus? So where are you with Jesus? Maybe you're here and you would say, well, I'm a little bit of a skeptic, actually, honestly. I'm a skeptic. There are a lot of roadblocks, some ideologies that I struggle with about Jesus and who he is and all of that. And so, yeah, I'm a skeptic. Maybe you're here, you're undecided, just like the jury's out, not sure, undecided. Or you're curious. You kind of pushed past some of the indecision and you're leaning in a little bit more. You're curious about this Jesus of Nazareth. You're curious about the Son of God. Or maybe you're here and you agree with Jesus. You agree. You're like many Christians who agree with Jesus, but don't necessarily follow. Wes says, he says, the people who agree with Jesus are not the people who change the world. It's the people who follow. The people who follow. It's one thing to agree with Jesus, but it's completely another to follow. No matter where you are on the spectrum, from skeptic to agree, no matter where you are in that spectrum, Jesus' expectation and his heart is, he's calling you to follow him. He's calling all of us. Because following is the only thing that'll transform a heart. It's the only thing. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? If you and I lived in the first century Israel, we the culture of the day had its own set of conflicting messages. You heard the Pax Romana in the writing, the kingdom of Rome. The kingdom of Rome offered this ideology, this thinking that basically was there to make you happy, give you your best life now. Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. Government rule, clean water, good roads, education, law and order, the best of that day. That's one way. Why wouldn't everybody just go that way? Or there was the kingdom of religion, basically, which espoused the thinking that basically all people are bad and religion will make you good and the world is evil and here's what you need to do to be good. And you know those Ten Commandments that Moses passed down, those are good, but you need about 600 other rules and regulations to really be good. That's what religion said. But religion itself will not transform your heart. Please hear this. If you've ever struggled, you're here and you struggle. Oh, this is religion. This is what religion's about. Religion won't transform a heart. Only Jesus can transform a heart. Only Jesus can change a heart. See, Jesus saw Pax Romana, saw the government, and he saw the rule of religion, and he said, and he introduced the kingdom of God. He brought a different thinking. He presented a different scenario. Where we actually pray, God, let your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And let me be an active part of your healing the world. Lord, use me. We used to sing this old chorus, if you can use anything, Lord, you can use me. Use me. Use me. We see the world around us and it looks dark and it looks in a lot of places, it looks hopeless. How many of you are like neat freaks? You like things clean and neat and tidy and in order all the time? That's not a trick question. We like things neat and clean. And we raised four little ones, four kids. Now they're all adults and they're out and making messes in the world. I mean, it's awesome. But we'd have those... Don't let that get out of here. I don't know if my son's here. Anyway, we raised them all But there are those moments as while they were young, we'd have house cleaning days. You know those days. Let's do it. Everybody, clean your room. And when you get in there and just go, you go through the whole process, and it's all nice and clean. But you have a problem. There's a problem in the house, and the problem is those four little people that are still in the house, still a part of life there. And then you clean it again, and then those four people don't go away. They're just there, and they keep undoing what you do. See, you get it. Oh, it's hitting home right now. But we can say to the world around us, oh, it's so bad. It's so ugly. And when why doesn't God do something about it? I can't believe God doesn't do something about that. And the problem is we're still in the world. We're still here. And the people around, humanity is here. God has a plan. See, the world experiences healing when we position our lives to be with Jesus. God's plan to help the world is to transform us, to do a work in us. He transforms us, and then we join him on his mission. To be with Jesus, to become like Jesus, and then take on the mission of Jesus. It's a pretty cool little plan. It's not a little plan, it's a big plan. It's Jesus, people, and the world. A Venn diagram. I didn't know that word before, I'm just telling you, all right. That's what this is, right? Because they're all intersecting. They're all interrelated. This is how Jesus intended the plan to work. And there's so many people that say, no, we don't want anything to do with the world. Jesus and people. Jesus and people. And the problem with this is it creates a bubble. And many of you, maybe you grew up in a bubble, Jesus and people. And you couldn't wait when you got old enough to get out of there. You went off to college and experienced the world and it's like, wow, and got blasted, right? Because you never understood, though this felt safe for a season, you never understood and learned how to push back darkness and overcome the enemy. Some people said that, so that was, That's how we try to renovate Jesus' plan, just Jesus and people. Or some would say, no, just people in the world. People in the world. It's all about people in the world. We don't need, with Jesus out of the picture, and we get great humanitarian works. We try to overcome all of the stuff in the world, the hatred, the trafficking, the darkness. But all the best we can provide without Jesus is a Band-Aid. No matter how much money we throw at it, it's just a Band-Aid, right? It's a Band-Aid. Or some would say, what about Jesus? It's about Jesus in the world. Jesus, get down here and fix the problems. Like this guy at this camp. It was the most disrespectful thing I saw at a camp. It was time to pray for the meal, and he just did this. Snapped his fingers, pointed to heaven. And he was joking. I get it. Ha, 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 ha. But a lot of times that's the picture of the world, or sometimes maybe even the church. We say, well, it's up to Jesus has got to get down here and fix the world. And what this really becomes is more about paid professionals. The guys with microphones taped to their faces are the ones that are supposed to come and make this happen. And we're really not involved in the picture. This is like 1%, over here 99%. Say it's up to the church people, that the clergy are the ones that are supposed to. Jesus never, his plan was never to just come down and, let me move this back here safely, grab some rabbis and say, hey, you 10, you 11, 12, whatever, you guys go and just change the world. No, he picked tax collectors and fishermen and people that other people wouldn't have picked. Picked us. In fact, the Bible says ordinary people. Ordinary people. God's plan was to integrate Jesus' people and the world, to bring healing to the world. It's a spiritual. The darkness in this world are spiritual issues. The poverty in the world is a spiritual issue. It's when the church rises up and says, yes, Jesus, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go on this mission. And he transforms our heart, and we take on the call, and we begin to go where he's called us. He chooses ordinary people like my great-grandpa, my great-grandfather in San Fernando, California, who... One day he got home from pushing a grocery car. He used to walk this thing around, this was many years ago, around the neighborhood and sell vegetables to the neighborhood. He got home and my great-grandmother wasn't there. She was at the church revival up the street that he detested. And he did not want her there. So he left his stuff and walked over to the church where the tent meeting was taking place. And he walked into the tent area, the opening there, and noticed that my grandmother was sitting way at the front of the church, like right over here. So he had to sit in the back and wait, gonna get her out of there. Meanwhile, the pastor's preaching, the evangelist, and he's talking about the love of Christ and the power of God to change a life. And much to my great-grandmother's surprise, is her husband, my great-grandpa, stands up and he comes and he responds to the altar call and he gives his life to Jesus. Awesome. Because when he stood up that day, yes, he stood up that day, all of a sudden, the legacy changed. He had no idea when he stood up that day, his great-grandson would pastor a church, and his great-great-grandson would be a worship pastor, his great-great-granddaughter would be a worship leader. I mean, he had no idea the legacy that would, ordinary people, what I'm saying, ordinary, you don't get any ordinary than pushing a grocery cart around the neighborhood telling. And now he used that same vehicle to just tell all of his neighbors about Jesus and the impact that Jesus made in his life. Come on. Come on. It's not the paid professionals. So here's a couple questions in closing today. What would it be like if 99% of humanity, tax collectors and fishermen, and everyone who wakes up on Monday and goes to work, believed that they're on the front lines of the mission of God? What would happen if 99% believed, I'm on the front lines? Believe that it's the only thing that will change the world. The church is such a beautiful organism because it's full of people that outside of this venue, you may have never got together before. Different expressions, backgrounds, history from SoCal, from Montana, Texas, different places. East side, west side, I don't know. Different places. Reminds me a little bit of when Jesus chose Matthew as he was choosing his disciples. I mean, I think some of the fishermen might have said, hey, I don't know if he's a good pick. He's a tax collector. I mean, the guy collects money and he pays the Roman government. It's like he's not, that wouldn't be. And Jesus picked him. He picked some zealot guy who wanted to overthrow Rome. He just picked ordinary people. I love what Acts 4:13 says when the disciples were standing before the council and the religious leaders were trying to shut them down. It says the members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, for they could see that they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures, and they also recognized them as men who had been with Jesus. You want to be an apprentice of Jesus? You need to be with him. And you can become like him. And then you just take on his, you take on the mission of Jesus. You begin to do it. You begin to walk it out. Unlike athleisure wear. Ask yourself, is there a congruity between the faith that I claim and the life that I live? Or am I sporting the look, but I'm not following Jesus? I agree. I'm not following. Jesus' apprentice is going to challenge us. It's going to stretch us. I need some stretching. I need stretching.